This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
There are words that immediately conjure a visceral response. Guantanamo, rendition, waterboarding. But what is your response to the two words, security certificate? What does it mean when the Canadian government targets a person for security certificate treatment? Does it arouse our visceral response? To examine the use of security certificates in Canada and what that means, we contacted Mary Foster in Montreal. She's a longtime activist focused on organizing against methods of political repression rationalized in the name of national security. Good morning, Mary, and welcome to Red Eye.
Thanks.
Could you give us a sketch of the use of security certificates in Canada since 9/11?
Since 9/11, security certificates have, not surprisingly, been used on Muslims and Arabs. And we've had since maybe 2002, 2003, an active campaign around five Muslim men who've been held under these security certificates. These are racial profiling measures under immigration law, and basically a profile is put forward of these individuals saying that they are threats. Threats isn't often defined very clearly. It's very vague, general allegations that are made, and when you look clearly at some of the allegations, you see that what is a threat or what is, you know, construed as a threat may well be put in other language as actively organizing against a repressive regime. But then it's reconstrued and labeled Islamic extremism and created into something that can be used by the Canadian government to establish a certain level of fear in the population here, at the same time as justifying, for example, in a very general way, justifying interventions, military interventions and economic interventions in Middle Eastern countries. So that's a very broad brush stroke portrait of how they've been used. And concretely, the five men that have been labeled and arbitrarily detained and been living under threat of deportation to further abuse and torture live in Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa. There's three men who have been under security certificates still living in Toronto, two of whom are still fighting their security certificate. That's Mohamed Majoub and Mahmoud Chabala. One man in Ottawa, Mohamed Harkat, is still continuing to fight his security certificate. And then two men have successfully, through the courts, challenged and freed themselves from this. That's Adel Sharkawi in Montreal and Hassan Amri in Toronto. But those two men are still having their citizenship withheld, and they're still being subject to attacks in the media as they struggle for accountability from the government for the loss of many of the years of their life and attacks on their reputation.
You mentioned that accusations have been made against them, mm-hmm. but have they been charged with anything? Have they, and what conditions have they been detained and held in?
So, good questions. No, they've never been charged with anything under the security certificate. I mean, there's many levels of abuse, but the security certificate procedure itself is abusive. It's based on detention without charge and without evidence. Evidence is kept secret. There are no specific allegations of crimes. It's the idea is to present a profile of someone as a potential security threat. So no charges are laid in these cases. And there's not even a suggestion in many of the cases that they have ever done any act. It's just the idea that their profile somehow represents a threat or a potential threat, and that's what the spy agency tries to establish through the court processes. And unfortunately, the federal court has gone along with this process, normalizing it in many ways. It's an insidious move towards an acceptance of detention without charge.
And this has gone on for, sometimes you have an image, you're arrested by a policeman, you're put in a cell, no charges made, etc. In a day, 2 days, a week, maybe a month, you're out. What's happened in terms of imprisonment with these five people?
So 11 and a half years, 9 years as of tomorrow for Mr. Harkat, and 10 and a half years for Mr. Jabala. Mr. Majoub, who's been in this the longest, it's been 11 and a half years, and that's been many years of solitary confinement in a prison in Toronto, followed by removal to a specially built detention facility, which was dubbed Guantanamo North in Kingston, where they were kept isolated in their own small prison from the rest of the prison population. He then was released under draconian house arrest. So we're talking cameras inside the house. Nobody can visit without permission from the Canadian Border Service Agency. 24 hours accompaniment requirement. Can only leave home with permission from the Canadian Border Services Agency, and after telling exactly where you're going to go, who you're going to talk to. No communication with anyone who is labeled a security threat. It's very no communication devices, no electronic communication devices, and so on and so forth. And then back into prison, back in a specially built detention facility for another not quite 2 years, almost 2 years, and then released again. Again under house arrest, this time by himself without his family, and where he is right now. So he's in court actually this week challenging those conditions of detention and telling his lawyers will be arguing to the federal court that the keeping him in this condition, under these conditions, is actually illegal. And that's what they're trying to convince the court to free him entirely from the conditions, pending the outcome of the case.
And that trial began this week, and is there any expectation as to when a judgment might come forward?
This is one of the horrible things of these security certificate cases. This is endless court hearings and then this waiting for a decision. So you never know when the decision is going to come. Sometimes it can come quite quickly, sometimes it can take months, and there's he'll be just living in this situation of uncertainty about which way the decision is going to go, possibly for sometimes it's taken up to 6 months just for a simple decision on a detention review. These cases.
In the past week, I think a week ago anyway, there were documents revealed, documents that came from Canada's spy agency, CSIS, in which CSIS said that the supposed evidence, anyway, that they have of terrorist activity or their allegations that underlies this whole process of arrest and imprisonment and abuse, If it was had to be brought to court, the court would discard it because it was evidence obtained through torture. Could you explain the significance of this revelation?
Yeah, it's a secret memo that the head of CSIS at the time, 2008, wrote to the Minister of Public Safety, advising him to oppose a proposed amendment to the security certificate law, which would exclude information obtained through the use of torture. And CSIS warned the minister that if this went ahead, if this amendment was adopted as law, and CSIS was no longer able to use information obtained as a result of the use of torture in these cases, all the current proceedings could be jeopardized. That is, all five cases would fall apart if CSIS were not allowed to include information obtained through torture, which is pretty shocking admission to make. And then specifically in a follow-up memo that was also obtained through disclosure to the court, CSIS specifically talked about Mr. Majoub's case and said that the bulk of information that was included in his security certificate case had been obtained from the use of torture. So with the implication that the rest of the information of his case was obtained from information from himself, interviews from himself. So basically, there's many elements of this. One, CSIS itself recognized that the security certificate cases they were putting forward were not something that the courts could accept, and yet they went ahead and proceeded with it anyway, even though they realized it was illegal. Secondly, they informed the Minister of Public Safety of that, so it was right up, the complicity in this went right up to the top levels in that government. That was Stockwell Bay at the time. Plus, Richard Fadden, the head of CSIS now, was also informed and in the loop on this decision to, or this evaluation, and then this final decision to issue the security certificate anyway. Most shockingly, I guess, is the fact that CSIS is so reliant on information that they believe could probably have been obtained through the use of torture. Specifically, Mr. Majoub's case, of course, this, we're talking about the regime that was just overthrown in Egypt, the Mubarak regime. So that's who they're talking about having obtained the information from. It's that close relationship between CSIS and the spy agency in Egypt under the Mubarak regime that seems to have led to the continued persecution of Mr. Majoub when he arrived in Canada.
Mr. Majoub, am I right, is of Egyptian nationality, and he was imprisoned in Egypt, was he not, for opposition to the dictatorship there?
Yes, he was. He was imprisoned, and he was tortured when he was there. He left Egypt because of the persecution and came to Canada, was accepted as a refugee here on that basis. But then it seems that CSIS and the Mukhabarat, the security and intelligence in Egypt, were exchanging information, and it seems that they were working quite closely together, so that persecution continued. And CSIS was able to have him arrested under a security certificate with the threat of being deported right back to Egypt. So Canada didn't end up being any kind of a safe haven for him at all.
You've also been working on the case of a man of Sudanese origin, Canadian of Sudanese origin, Abu Sufyan Abdulrazak. It's not a security certificate case, but it's definitely, he's been a victim of political repression again in the pretext of national security. But maybe we could end on the good news of the positive development that has just happened in his case. Would you tell us about that victory?
Yeah, I mean, we were all saying we never thought we'd be celebrating a delisting. But that seems to be the political situation we're in today. His name was removed from the UN blacklist last week. And that was, you know, partly as a result of a very broad movement in support of Mr. Abdurazak that reached across the country. It was quite inspiring to see people come together and refuse a lot of these politics, refuse that fear that underlies it, and refuse the racism that underlies it, and embrace Mr. Abdurazak as a member of the community and as someone that they stood in solidarity with. So it was pretty inspiring to see people take quite a strong stand in his case and eventually win. You know, even though it's a, sort of a real David and Goliath kind of story, Mr. Abdurazak is living here in Montreal, and he was up against the Security Council of the United Nations, but won with a lot of support from public and popular support from others here.
Well, let us take some inspiration from that and hope that your work in the case of the people facing the security certificate abuses, Mr. Majoub in particular, have some success in the court case in Ontario. Thanks a lot, Mary, for speaking with us today.
Thanks, Mordecai.
I've been speaking with Mary Foster in Montreal. She's a longtime activist, and she focuses on organizing against methods of political repression that have been rationalized in the name of national security.